Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Sea Control, a podcast series brought to you by the Center of International Maritime Security. My name is Natalie Sambi, and I'm an analyst at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute in Canberra, and I'm also editor of The Strategist, our official blog. I'm now bringing you the Asia-Pacific series of Sea Control, and today our episode will be about game changers in Asia. In short, we'll be looking at the way in which the Asia-Pacific region, in particular Southeast Asia, has been evolving over the last couple of years. And it's of particular interest to Australia, the way in which our neighbours are changing economically, politically, and militarily. I'll have two guests today, Dr. Rod Lyon and Mr. Daniel Grant, who've written about domestic changes in the region and what they might mean for Australia. We'll be talking a little bit about what game changers are, what the domestic changes in Southeast Asia that are significant to us are, and we'll be also focusing on Indonesia, obviously a country of great significance, strategic significance to us. We'll be talking about what Australia wants from Indonesia in future, what kind of country would be favourable to our interests, and a little bit about the US rebalance, how the US rebalance might change the region, and a little bit about the long term of that. So without much further ado, I'll get started, and thanks very much for joining us.
Do you enjoy Sea Control? Sure you do. You're one of the good ones. We are available on iTunes and Stitcher Stream Radio. Subscribe, leave a comment, and give us a 5-star rating. If you enjoy our podcast series, consider following up with the Next War blog at our homepage, www.cimsec.org. Last week's theme was wargaming. We think Sea Control is a fine product, and anyone who says otherwise will likely get eaten alive by black swans. And now, back to the show.
Today my guests are Dr. Rod Lyon and Mr. Daniel Grant. There are two of my colleagues from ASPI, that's the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, a think tank based out of Canberra that focuses on defence and strategic policy from an Australian perspective. Dr. Lyon is currently a fellow specialising in international strategy, and he's currently the executive editor of the ASPI blog The Strategist, and also my boss. Daniel Grant, on the other hand, is an intern with research interests in international strategy, East Asian maritime security, and Australian strategic policy. Now, what we'll be doing today is we'll be discussing a couple of blog posts my colleagues have written on our official blog, The Strategist. If you haven't checked it out already, it's available on www.aspistrategist.org.au. So today's topic is game changers in Asia. So I'll start with you, Dr. Lyon. What are game changers, and why do they matter?
Well, let me start with the terminology first, because I think game changers is terminology that's more frequent in the business world, and that's where it was first coined. And in that realm, it refers to sudden changes in strategic approach to give you a sudden advantage over a competitor. And in a very fluid strategic environment like you find in Asia, where there's lots of asymmetric strategy unfolding, I think the concept translates quite well. And it gives us another way of thinking about the Asian environment and where its future might lie.
All right. And in this sense, can you give me some examples of how these asymmetries are created?
Well, they can be created in a number of ways. You can create them either through sudden changes in military capability or through exploitation of the commons, the realm of cyber or the realm of space. You can create them through diplomatic reorientation or through a range of political factors.
All right. Looking at this particularly from an Australian perspective, we're often concentrating on Southeast Asia and those sorts of areas there. What other kinds of game changers are there in Southeast Asia, and why might they matter to Australia?
Well, if we start with the diplomatic ones first, I think you've seen over the last year... I think you've seen Burma's reorientation as a game changer. Burma moved from being a close confidant and friend of China and North Korea to a country that wanted to rejoin its ASEAN brothers and wanted to reach out to the economies and the social environment of the West. So I think Burma's reorientation is a great example. I think you also see political changes that are going through Southeast Asia, both internally to the countries themselves, but also in their relationships with the US. The US is now suddenly back in Southeast Asia in a way that it hasn't been since the Vietnam War. And I think you also see a slow and more gradual accretion of military capabilities that give those countries quite suddenly the ability to do more. We see that more with China, and China's reach into Southeast Asia is a factor of its gradually improving naval capabilities that now will let it do naval exercises south of Indonesia. So we see the Chinese presence growing around Southeast Asia as a game-changer event.
Right. Turning now to Dan for a second. Dan, you've written a response to Dr. Lyon about his post about game changers. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about what you elaborated in that post?
Sure. Well, the way I was thinking about it was thinking about game changers in a little bit different sense than game changers in terms of military technology and things like that. I was more thinking about domestic politics as a game changer in the sense that it would... domestic politics and its capacity to shape the strategic trajectory of important and consequential states in Asia.
Right. So, I mean, and which consequential sort of states are those, in your opinion?
Well, this is probably a very Australian bias, but I was looking at those that are the most important to Australia, in my view, and those were the United States, Japan, and Indonesia.
Right. And just picking up the theme that we've been discussing between Dr. Lyon and I about Southeast Asia, mm-hmm. You know, obviously Indonesia is an extremely important country for Australia. It's often where our strategic interests lie. Any sort of threat for our listeners historically have been considered as emanating from or through Indonesia.
Sure.
So many of the developments in Indonesia are something that we keep a close eye on. In your blog post or in your opinion, I mean, what other kinds of domestic, as you put it, domestic kind of game changers?
Sure. Well, I think just to take a step back, one of the motivations for writing the piece was that one sometimes comes across a sense that the international system, within the international system, states respond to material power and incentives in a pretty predictable and, you know, uniform way, and, you know, almost like Newtonian physics, as one country rises, many countries will, you know, form a coalition to balance against that. And that was sort of my motivation for writing this piece, was to sort of maybe contest that and to show the ways that domestic politics sometimes shapes how countries respond to the supposed imperatives of the international system.
And so you picked Japan and Indonesia, amongst others, to illustrate that, right?
Sure. Well, sure. Just to show that there is quite a lot of uncertainty within these, and that domestic politics really fuels the uncertainty about, in quite important ways, domestic politics can fuel the uncertainty regarding the strategic trajectory of these important mm-hmm. countries.
Excellent. And with regards to Indonesia, I mean, mm-hmm. what specifically is it within Indonesia that our listeners could pay attention to?
Sure. Well, analysts often point to the Natuna's Island dispute, or the mm-hmm. dispute over the waters surrounding the Natuna's Island, which obviously falls within China's nine-dash line.
So we'll just go back and talk a little about, for our listeners' benefits, the Natuna Islands is actually a piece of sovereign territory in Indonesia, but it also actually falls within China's nine-dash line claims. Historically, Indonesia has been what we can consider a non-aligned country. During the Cold War, it neither sided with the United States or the Soviet Union explicitly. It maintained a bit of strategic ambiguity, and so in its dealings in world affairs, it tries to act as diplomatically as possible and not align itself. So at present, though, it's finding itself in a bit more of a challenging position.
Sure.
Now, with China starting to, you know, I guess, be a little bit more assertive, I suppose, with other countries in Southeast Asia, with the South China Sea area.
Yep.
And, you know, could that be Indonesia? And what kind of effect might that have on Indonesia?
Yeah, sure. So it's one of those examples where analysts will point to this supposed clash in material interests. On the face of it, it certainly appears that way. And, you know, looking at the Indonesian response as an indicator of its overall strategic trajectory and how it may respond to the broader phenomenon of China's rise. And I just wanted to, not throw cold water on it, but really just throw in some of the nuance that the domestic debate in Indonesia and some of Indonesia's other interests might add to the picture. And those were you know, you could look at the way Indonesian democracy responds to the becoming more economically dependent on China. That could turn the debate in a variety of ways, and also Indonesian democracy and its response to perhaps American military actions in the Middle East.
Sure, absolutely. Just to bring Dr. Lyon back into this for a second.
Well, can I say that what Dan's working on is critical for how Australia sees its own future? When Australia thinks about what its own game changer options are, there are two big diplomatic ones that leap out. The first is getting the US more involved in Southeast Asia. But the second one is for Indonesia to grow its strategic trajectory to become much more of an independent power core within the sub-region. Now, if both of those things happen, things that we might do by modernising the ADF will then have a much more favourable environment to play out. If neither of those things happen, then what we can do with the ADF will be much more constrained.
Just on that first point, actually, I mean, when you say we want the United States, I mean, from our perspective, it would be strategically favourable for there to be, for, let's put it this way, for the US to make good on its policy of the rebalance, because there are sceptics at the moment. Why is it? What is it specifically about US engagement in Southeast Asia that would create those favourable conditions for us?
When we look at Asia, we see an Asia where strategic weight is moving away from its traditional Northeast Asian focus, and it's moving, the centre of gravity is moving southwest. And we've seen the rise of China, the rise of India, and quite noticeably the rise of economies within the ASEAN community. And as that weight moves southwest, we actually want the US footprint to rebalance, not just to Asia, but within Asia. And a US that comes southwest from its traditional primary focus in Northeast Asia is one that will be a better security partner for us.
Right. Dan, I remember actually for your thesis last year, you wrote about Indonesia relations with the United States and China, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure.
Can you speak a little bit about how you see, from Indonesia's perspective, increased American engagement in the region? I mean,
sure.
A little bit about, you know, US-Indonesia relations. Is that as Dr. Lyon says?
Yeah. Well, I think the main point, the conclusion that I came to at least, was how deeply embedded non-alignment is in Indonesian strategic culture, and there are many reasons for this.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of pertain to both the nature of Indonesia as a state, the fact that it has, that its prime security concerns remain internal, separatism, intercommunal violence, and you know it does have a lot of work to, the government does have a lot of work to do on the development front, and mm-hmm. that will be, you know, they quite understandably, a lot of energy goes into domestic politics. And also I think more broadly, what isn't understood from an Australian point of view is that non-alignment makes a lot of strategic sense if you are geographically situated where Indonesia is geographically situated. And that was the message that I kept coming across when speaking with Indonesians, is that it isn't just a muddling through without making a decision. That many Indonesians do see it as the most viable strategy, with, given the current uncertainties about America's staying power in Asia, and also China's rise.
Dr. Lyon, you look like you're going to jump in here. Go for it.
Well, I don't think we're asking Indonesia to make a bipolar choice.
Sure.
We were doing that during the days of the Cold War, and it didn't want to go there,
mm-hmm.
and it had good reasons for that. But what Australia would like to see is an Indonesia that grows into itself, if I can put it like that, an Indonesia that is a power core in its own right. It doesn't have to be Washington's vassal in Southeast Asia.
Sure.
It has to be Indonesia's definition of what a major player in Southeast Asia is and what it does.
But I mean, that's true. I agree with that. I think part of that, though, it is sort of looking at engaging larger powers as well. And so from that perspective, Indonesia needs to determine what level of cooperation it wants with China, and then how that might affect its level of cooperation with the United States as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what Dan's alluding to, and I might be incorrect, is this whole policy of non-alignment may not hamper necessarily, but stunt the level to which Indonesia could enjoy good relations with the United States. I mean, it could also act as a useful balancing tool with China without indicating that it's aligning itself with the United States at all. But I wonder to what extent non-alignment is going to become problematic down the track, or just, I mean, as something that may require revisiting. I'm not sure. But for now, I mean, from our perspective, it's, you know, it's part of Indonesia's strategic culture. So I think we'll wait and see where that goes for now, if the status quo, you know, remains, obviously. I think, you know, another thing that we could think about, you know, from Australia's perspective, we think a lot about Indonesian domestic circumstances. And one of the things, obviously, is their upcoming election for their president, because we've just had legislative elections there. I mean, how does Australia look at Indonesia in terms of characters? What are the favourable conditions in Indonesia that would work for Australia in terms of a national character? Because I think our white paper in the past has talked about a friendly Indonesia. What does that mean, Dr. Lyon?
Well, I think our thinking on Indonesia in past white papers has been relatively muddled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we've always been torn between seeing it as an opportunity and seeing it as a threat. And even within Canberra, those disparate perceptions of Indonesia have coloured what we believed we could do with it. I think we're growing out of the idea that Indonesia is a security worry for us, but we haven't grown fully into the idea of how much we can do together. I think it's not just a friendly Indonesia. We want an Indonesia that is secure in itself, that looks past the archipelago, because so much of Indonesian strategic thinking has turned upon holding together a country made up of 13,000 islands. And I understand that. If Australia was made up of 13,000 islands, we would have exactly the same worry.
Sure.
But an Indonesia that is confident in its own boundaries, is confident in its own pluralism, is confident in the growth of its own size, not just in a population sense, but the growth of its own economic strength, is willing to be a big brother to its neighbours, is willing to help define what Southeast Asia's strategic character will look like, is willing to get on with its neighbours, including countries like Australia, where it's going to have occasional frictions, and that's going to be unavoidable. But an Indonesia that grows into its power is, for us, a good thing. It puts a separate, distinct strategic pole between us and larger players further to the north.
Right.
I'm wondering if I could ask you a question following up on that, just regarding specifically what growing into itself might mean. In a strategic sense, you know, I guess this is probably the Australian, another Australian bias coming out, but to consider Australia growing into itself, we would, at least personally, I would consider that we would perhaps need outside help in terms of military procurement, things like that, aligning with other countries in the region to, you know, to further our shared strategic goals. And I think that's the sense that I was coming at, Indonesia's non-alignment remaining a factor in its growth into a major power. Could you speak about Indonesia growing into itself might entail, if not some kind of alignment?
Well, I don't think it means autarky.
Mm-hmm.
I think even Indonesia is wise enough when looking at the South here and when looking at the broad Asian environment to know that the only country that's really pursuing that line is North Korea, and it doesn't want to go down that path. So I think an Indonesia growing into itself is an Indonesia that's confident enough to pursue relative policies of self-reliance without becoming so introspective that it collapses inward in its own strategic vision. If anything, we want an Indonesia, as I said, that looks beyond the archipelago, that develops friendships, even if not alliances, with other players, that knows it's going to need to reach out to others, not just to be trade partners, but to be strategic partners. And strategic partners won't be allies, but I think they're going to be exploring much more that they can do together.
Mm-hmm. And regarding the hard power element, like developing an indigenous...
Same is true.
Sure.
Yeah, Indonesia does not have the domestic industry capacity to grow itself. The modern technologies. When you go back to where we started with the game changers. Where are the game changers coming? It's not just in the growth of quality navies. It's in cyber. It's in space capabilities. It's in drones. It's in hypersonic vehicles. It's in ballistic missiles and ballistic missile defenses. It's in directed energy weapons. I mean, those are the areas where Indonesia can't rely purely upon its own domestic capacities. It's going to have to partner with others.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, actually, even on the couple that you list there, you know, cyber and drones and whatnot, I don't see Indonesia developing those things in a way in which would be, you know, would make a dramatic change to the balance of power, either relative to us or relative to the rest of the region. I see it sort of relying, like you said, more on gathering that economic stability and political stability to then use itself diplomatically and pulling on those levers, as opposed to necessarily relying on the capability, unless I've mistaken. Is that your characterization of what Indonesia's game changers might be?
That's my definition of what Asia's game changers look like.
Okay, so all together.
Not all countries will pursue all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some, like China, pursue almost every game changer. Some pursue relatively small and select numbers of game changers.
Yes.
I think the main Indonesian game changer comes about by Indonesian reorientation in terms of embracing its own role, if I can put it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's, as you say, that's got a lot to do with national empowerment. But I would expect to see some flow over from that into hard power capability. Not a lot necessarily, but it'll depend on what the environment looks like around it.
Sure. Sure.
Mm.
And I just wanted to add, is there anything else that we wanted to add with game changers today? Because we've had quite a sort of a thorough discussion from an Australian perspective about, you know, our most significant regional strategic partner, which is Indonesia, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other sort of closing statements we might want to add about game changers in Asia more broadly? A takeaway for our audience, if you will?
Only one thought, and it's a sort of warning as much as anything else. I think the Asian fascination with game changers is worrying because it suggests that hedging is becoming a more important part of the environment rather than order building and shaping are. And when I look at Asia in 2014 compared with 2010, this is an Asia that's less interested in institutions and more interested in game changers. And I think there's been, over the past few years, a subtle shift towards more hedging and less order building.
That's as good a summation as I could come up with. I thought that one of the, one of the game changer that, in terms of strategic trajectory, which occupies the most attention in Asia, is of course a non-Asian country, the United States, and you know that's a pretty vigorous debate within the United States. And as much as the rise of China and the relative decline of the United States is one element of the current uncertainty, also domestic politics really occupies a lot of, you know, grabs a lot of attention here. It's fascinating how that has come to the forefront of how people are perceiving the US America's staying power in Asia, and that's one of the things I'll take away.
Lovely. All right. Well, I'd just like to thank my two guests for today.
Thank you, Dr.
Rod Lyon and Mr. Daniel Grant. They're both my colleagues at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. I'd like to thank all our listeners for joining us for another edition of Sea Control Asia Pacific Edition, brought to you by the Centre of International Maritime Security. And if you're interested in more of this kind of considered analysis that ASPE produces, I encourage you to visit us on our blog at aspistrategist.org.au, or you might like to follow us on Twitter at ASPI_org. We look forward to bringing you more of C-Control in future, and join us next time. It'll be ASPI's International Cyber Policy Centre who'll be talking about cyber metrics and cyber maturity in the Asia Pacific. Thanks very much, and don't forget to like us on iTunes. Thanks very much. Bye.
Thank you.
Do you enjoy C-Control? We certainly hope you do. The Center for International Maritime Security is dedicated to bringing you the unique insights and perspectives that you've come to expect, and bring you back every week to our Sea Control podcast, the Next War blog, and our regular meetups. Becoming a member is easy. Go to www.cimsec.org/about/membership to get our articles via email and receive a WordPress account that allows you to submit your own material. We're here to expand the dialogue, so don't be shy about submitting your own podcast topics or blog articles. Don't forget to support the podcast by leaving a comment, a 5-star rating, and tell all of your friends. We appreciate it.